Welcome to another episode of the Sal and Bob Show. I am comedian Sal D'Amelio. Across from me is the one and only Mr. Bob Phillips. Bob,
Sally.
How you doing, man?
I couldn't be doing better, man. It's Christmas week. It is the winter solstice today.
It is today, right?
It's today.
So starting tomorrow, the days will get 1 minute longer.
Yes,
we'll have one more minute of daylight.
Sir. That is exactly
than we had yesterday or the day, right?
Yes.
So it's starting to move forward, as it is.
It's starting to move forward, and it's a good thing. It's the first day of winter,
okay.
The winter solstice, but it's also a move toward more sunlight. Things are going to get better, buddy.
Yes, I think things are going to get better. Good point, Bob. Well, we wish everybody a Merry Christmas on here that's listening to us, and a Happy New Year. We are in the week of December 22nd here. 2020, we have literally 9 more days to go in the worst year in the history of mankind. So we're going to get out of it. We're going to drop the ball on New Year's Eve in Times Square with no people.
Yeah, isn't
so that
weird?
Means the ball can just
Andy
drop
Cohen in. And who's the guy from CNN?
Wolf Blitzer?
No.
Anderson Cooper?
Yeah, Wolf Blitzer out there. You know, Anderson Cooper and Andy Cohen, they're doing their New Year's Eve thing.
That's right.
To an empty Times Square. What a bizarre.
What, is the ball going to drop and then just roll down the street like it's going to hit a 7-10 split after?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
What is the ball going to do when it drops?
I don't know, but it's going to be 2021, and I'm going to be so happy.
That is unbelievable. That Times Square will be empty. I can't.
Yeah.
How can you even have that on television? Like, what are you going to show?
Maybe they'll pump in crowd noise like they do for the Lions games. Right?
First of all, we don't know what's happening with the Trump election. So all the stores are going to be boarded up. It's going to be Times Square all boarded up.
Yeah,
all
boarded up. So nobody loots on New Year's Eve.
It's going to look like a warehouse at Home Depot. Anyway, well, Happy New Year to everybody.
It's a perfect end to a perfectly strange year to have
it is
an empty Times Square and the ball dropping and two guys talking about it. Hey, there it is. Okay.
There it is. You know, this is the year, and I know he passed away and it sucks, but I wish that Dick Clark could have hung on for a few more years just for him to drop the ball this year. You know what I mean? Like, it would have been good for him to drop the ball in this kind of a year and then die. You know, like
and
just
then die.
Like, you know, cause,
like on screen or
well,
just...
no, but like he could have been the guy to bring us into the Roaring Twenties.
Oh yeah,
what I've said is going to be the Roaring Twenties.
It is going to be.
It's going to be the biggest decade.
You are absolutely right, sir.
I think so. I think 2030. I'm going to be living in a castle in Northville because I made so much money.
We're going to make so much money telling jokes, buddy. I completely believe that. Can I?
If not, I'll stay in my apartment in Farmington.
No, that's not going to happen. We're branching out. We're moving forward. The Roaring Twenties are coming, buddy. I love that prediction. I want to do something real quick here, if you don't mind. I want to do a shout out to one of our listeners. This happens to me. One of my brothers-in-law, John Grisbeck, and his wife, Sandy Grisbeck.
Thank you, John and Sandy, for listening.
Yeah, and their kids, Mac and Maddie. These are four of the...
Mac and
Lovely.
Maddie, those great names.
Oh, they are. Yeah, it's great names. Mackenzie and Madison. These are four of the best people I know, truly. And I had a conversation with John Grisbeck just last week, who said that he's a loyal listener.
I didn't know that.
But he was introduced to it by my nephew, Mac, who said, I want you to listen to this. Somehow he discovered us. And they listen to us all the time. And I want to say thank you for listening. Thank you for being awesome people. I love you. And this one's for you.
That's awesome, man. That's great. Good to hear. It's great to hear. You know, because we do that, like we talked about all the time. Everyone has a podcast. It's hard to ask people to listen to your podcast when there's so many things going on and so many
But ours is good, so we don't mind.
So, yeah, we appreciate anybody that listens to us. We just do this because we love to tell jokes, and this is a way for us to do this and not be on stage right now. So, thank you. Thank you for listening. That's
absolutely
awesome. That's great. Well, we got a couple things we want to talk about today. We want to talk about some Christmas stuff, obviously, just because it's Christmas week. So we're going to talk about our worst and maybe our best holiday Christmas show that we've ever done personally. We want to talk about Eddie Izzard is back in the news. And we're going to talk about what he's talking about on social media.
One of the funniest guys in the world.
Hysterical.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy's made me laugh for years, man. That guy's hysterical.
The way
man.
He weaves a story, he does an hour, 15, hour and a half.
It's absolutely incredible.
And you think
incredible.
He's lost the thread and it all comes together in the end. It's just brilliant.
Incredible.
Yeah.
We want to talk about some Super Bowl ad spots as football is coming to a close here. And we want to talk about that. Tiger Woods played with his son over the weekend. My college football bowl predictions. We got a lot to talk about today.
All right,
but
let's get
I want
at
to start
it.
With you, Bob. What uh-huh. is your you've been doing comedy for 15, 20 years. I don't know.
Next year will be 17 years.
Yeah,
crazy.
Real quick, I guess, with no long story or whatever. Uh-huh. What is your best and worst Christmas gig? It can be at a gig at a club that you had where, you know, let's say Roger at the Ann Arbor Comedy Showcase
yeah.
said, hey Bob, come in and do this Christmas party. It could be that, or it could be you doing shows at the back of a Cracker Barrel. You know, it could be anything. So
yeah.
What is yours?
All right. Well, best, it's an easy one for me because, you know, we do a lot of corporate shows around the holidays. You get booked to do an hour for... Pick a company, right?
ABC Construction Company.
Yeah,
or
I mean, it isn't really, you know, and you go and you do it, and everybody's drunk and happy, and it's usually a good time.
You collect a check, you walk out the door, you know.
And the Christmas money is great. I mean, when you get $2,000.
I've done some Christmas gigs, and I'm being honest, where you see the food and the booze they throw at you mm-hmm. for free. You're oh my God, the check was the check was gravy. I would have done this gig for the food and the booze
yeah.
you just gave me.
Mm-hmm.
The check is just, you know, something I'm going to deposit in the bank. And
That's right. Yeah.
You know
you're
what
like,
I mean?
Oh, like I get paid for this too? Yeah, it's funny. Well, I tell you what, I'm going to do my worst first, okay? Because
okay.
the best, you're going to be surprised by this.
Okay.
You don't know what I'm going to say about the best. You think you know, but you don't know. So the worst easily, I did a show, and I want to say I was probably 2 years in. And, you know, 2 years in, you kind of know what you're doing, but you're still making rookie mistakes, and you're still, you know, the crowd is still getting you off balance, and you're not quite sure where to go when
yeah.
the crowd goes south on you, right? And so I did this show, and it was out in Brighton, Michigan. And this was at a place that I know you went to. It's downtown Brighton, and it's a very well-known restaurant. I can't remember the name of it now, but they had a banquet hall downstairs. Great restaurant up.
Oh, you're talking about Chawamichi's.
Yes,
it's an Italian restaurant.
Yeah, great place.
There, you know, probably once a month.
Yes, and that was upstairs. And downstairs, that's where they had weddings.
But it was a very small room, if I remember. It wasn't
Yeah, I mean, it probably sat 120.
Okay.
But they had small weddings and things like that. So anyway, this is a Christmas show, and I get there, and I even forget the name of the company. It was a local company. It was a local distributor of a large company. So there was probably 100 people there, okay?
Okay.
50 employees and spouses and girlfriends and boyfriends. So I get there, and I'm talking with the organizer of this, and I said, well, what do you want me to do? You know, what's the theme here? Do you want me to roast people? Do you want, no, let's just, you know. And he goes, it would be really funny if you went up and pretended you were a health inspector and told everybody we had a problem in the kitchen. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. You know, I'm your monkey, buddy. I don't know what it paid me. Back then it was probably $500, right?
Yeah.
I said, okay, I'm your guy. What do you want me to do? Well, I want you to go up there and say this, this, and this. I said, okay. So that was the first mistake I made in the evening, listening to somebody, you know, tell me how to open this show. So I get up there and I tell them, and I'm in a suit and tie like I always am, and I'd say, you know, I'm the health inspector for Livingston County. I need to know who had the chicken, right? Anybody had the chicken, I need to talk to you. And people are genuinely getting weird looks on their face, like not thinking I'm an actual health inspector. The weird looks were like, wait a minute, who is this? Why are they doing this? So they're instantly mad at me, okay? This was not an endearing moment.
Yeah.
And I said, listen, I'm going to have to take your names down. We've had a problem in the kitchen. And if anyone has had the salmon, you know, not as big a problem, but come talk to me. And so they're just looking at me like, okay, what is this?
Oh, my God.
So I had two choices. I could continue on with this stupid ruse.
Yeah.
Or I could just break character and say, hey, look, I'm your entertainer for the evening. Let's have some fun. No, the guy who suggested this comes on stage and doesn't tell me this and wants to have this banner. Like I'm still the health inspector. I'm like, ah, no, this is not working. Jesus. This is not working. It's awful. And so
you did so much for your paycheck that night.
Oh, it was miserable.
That's your worst?
Well, it got worse. Okay. So yeah, that was, I'm not going to, I won't tell you all the ins and outs of it, but yeah, that was the worst. I hated it. It got much worse from that moment on.
All right. Well, give me your best one.
All right. Now, you probably don't expect me to say this, but I'm going to tell you, this is the best one because this to me typifies the life of a road comedian and what the hell we have to do and all the ins and outs of entertaining people, especially in the holiday season. You and I were in Vegas 2 years ago, and we'd gone to the Golden Steer.
About literally almost 2 years ago to the day.
Oh, it was a great trip. We got our asses kicked out there.
Yeah.
Which always happens with a Sal and Bob Endeavor.
So pissed. Yeah, but it, 10 in a row, come on.
I know, crazy. Right. Yeah, right. Sal lost 10 hands in a row, if you can believe it. It was the most disgusting thing I've ever seen.
The Joker got me on the last hand. No, I was kidding.
He's like, wait a minute, this is blackjack. What are you pulling out of your Joker? This is bullshit. Yeah, they're like, that's just a bust card. No matter what you got, we put that down, you bust. So you and I had gone out there, and we did the Golden Steer, and we were trying to, you know, we're doing PR work for the Sal and Bob show, and we're out there and having a great time. And there was a show that you had arranged the day we got back.
Yes.
From Vegas. So we...
I totally remember that.
We get on the plane in Vegas, and I don't know what it was, maybe noon in Vegas? Something like that?
3 o'clock our time. We landed at about 7:20 p.m. kind of thing, and we had a show.
So yeah, we landed late.
Yep.
And you had arranged for a Christmas show.
Yep.
At
Portofino's.
At Portofino, where your club is, the comedy room.
Yep. And we did it in the back room. We didn't do it in my regular room. We did it in the back room where I had to set up my personal sound equipment and all that.
We got off the plane. And we were humping. We're like, get our luggage, get the hell off this plane. We're in street clothes. And we get to the restaurant. I am literally changing in the bathroom.
Yep.
It's 10 minutes before showtime. And there's people banging on the stove. Hey, what's going on in there? I'm like, I'm the comedian, or one of them. So we go out, and there's probably, 80 people there? And the organizer of the show is heckling us. And I'm not going to say the name of the company. They were good people, but it's like they didn't quite know what we had gone through to get to this show on time and, you know, writing jokes on the plane and all this stuff. And it wound up being not the greatest show ever, but in my mind, it was the absolute best example of what comics go through to get from one place to another and show up and change personality and get under that light and start doing jokes, man. Changed into the bathroom. And I loved it because it was you and me, and we just got off the plane from Vegas. Yep. We had a great time there. So it's a great memory.
No, that was a great show. I totally remember that. And you're right. It was actually a really, really fun show. That was great. It was a lot of fun. I'm going to tell you mine. I'm going to bundle mine.
You're going to go together. Best and worst or worst and best?
I'm doing them together.
Oh, it was best and worst.
I actually had one show that was the best and the worst at the same time, believe it or not. Shout out to Jason Douglas and Comedian Nationwide because he got me this gig. And he said, hey, it's a company Christmas party in Grand Rapids. Here's the price. And it was really good money. And he goes, hey, if you don't mind calling this girl to just set up. Because, you know, once you get a Christmas, especially a Christmas gig, from whoever you get it from, you always want to connect with the person that's running it. Because
of course,
you've got to connect. It has nothing to do with the agent. Now it's about... What do you want from me?
Yes.
You want me to make fun of Bob and accounting, you know, all that. I hate to use your name. But anyway, so I call this lady up. This is like a day before the show. And she goes, will you do me a favor? And I go, of course. She goes, I really haven't been dating a lot in the last, like, the, swear to God, that's how she starts it off. Really? She goes, I really haven't been dating much in the last probably 10 years.
You're like, hey, look, I just tell jokes, honey.
I got divorced 10 years ago and this and that. She goes, would you mind acting like you're my date during, wow. during, like, when people are walking in and during dinner?
That's like a Julia Roberts movie.
And then she goes, and then you'll just go up and tell jokes and you'll let everybody know that you're not my date. You're my comedian.
Okay.
And I hired. All right, and yeah. I go, now, in theory, I'm like, all right, this sounds fun, right? I'm like, hey, whatever floats your boat, I'll do this. So she goes, okay, would you mind showing up early, standing yeah. next to me like you're my date? And all these people that I work with are going to be coming in going, oh, my God, Sherry brought a date. You know. And then I would sit with her at dinner and all that, and then I would do my show.
Yeah.
Right? I'm like, sure, I'll do that.
Yeah.
Well, I do that. And to not bore you with all the details, obviously I was standing next to her when her coworkers were walking in and everybody was looking at me like, who's this guy? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then she would introduce me as my...
We thought she was a lesbian.
Yeah, I got a couple of that. But so she was working the front door. So after she kind of let everybody know that was walking in that I was her date, I just went off on my own because I wanted to go find the bar, to be honest with you. So right. I go over to the bar, and it's probably like 15 minutes before dinner time. And now everybody looking at me is like, I'm Sherry's date that's but hasn't dated anybody in a long time.
All of a sudden, you're stag.
And yeah. And all of a sudden, I'm getting like, you know, the girls that were happy for her kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like the
oh,
girls
yeah,
come
yeah.
out there going, oh my God, I'm so glad Sherry found somebody finally.
Yeah, so tell yeah, me about that. You.
I was getting that. But then I was getting the like William Zabka of Cobra Kai.
Yeah, right.
The guy that dated her or oh, tried to date her.
Yeah, yeah.
I was getting that guy
He's
too.
Like, what do you got that I don't got?
He, you know, guys coming up to me going, oh, so you're dating Sherry, huh? And I'm like, yeah. Yeah, so
oh, no.
So where did you take her for your first date, you know, kind of thing? Like where this guy probably took her to an Indian restaurant because she likes Indian food. You know what I mean? Like now yeah. all of a sudden I'm like,
I took her to my bedroom.
We went to our first meeting. Oh, I think we went to Buffalo Wild Wing, you know, because we wanted to watch the Steelers game.
Yeah.
Like I'm trying to figure, but these are guys that are like, you know, interested in her that work yeah, at the yeah. company, you know? So I was having that. And so that's why it was my worst because the pre-show was horrible. I felt like I was dating somebody again, like, you know, and then I sat
all
next
the worst
to her during
parts
dinner.
Of dating.
I'm sitting next to her during dinner. I even said to her at one point, I'm like, hey, do you really want to make this like really look good? You want me to lay a nice one on you here, like during dinner or something? She's like, oh, that's funny. She was just, I was just kidding around, but you know, it was just something I said
yeah,
to her
yeah.
to break up the ice or whatever. And anyway, long story short, after like during dinner, when dinner was almost over, everybody's eating their desserts or whatever, she went up on the part of the stage or whatever you want to call it, and she just let everybody know, thank you. You know, she was like head of human resources or whatever.
Right, yeah.
And she goes, Sal is not my date, and he is a stand-up comedian. And the crowd kind of went, oh, my God. You know, like I heard some boos
yeah,
and
yeah,
some claps.
Some boos.
So
why were they booing?
I don't know. So she's like, he's our stand-up comedian. And she introduces me, and I go up, and I remember joking about, like, everybody that came up to me. Because I said, okay, before I get started on my act, I want to talk about everybody that came up to me. And I'm like, okay, you know, Laura over there, you know, you're so nice. You came up to me and said, you know, you're glad that Sherry finally found somebody, and everybody laughed and everything. And then, you know, I went to the William Zabka guy and said, hey, you know, maybe you should ask her for her number or something like that. Like yeah. I joked that he yeah. should ask her
Don't
out.
Tell me about it, pal. Tell her.
Yeah, but it was really funny. And then I went into my act and I'm like, okay, my act is probably going to suck tonight, right? Because I was just,
Why
I was
would
just
you
exposed.
Think that?
I don't know. I was just exposed that I wasn't her date. And I'm like,
okay,
is this going to go good now?
Now they're
and
not going to believe anything you
it
say.
It was unbelievable. It was like one of the best sets I've ever had.
Well, yeah, I was
because it just felt like I was like, I felt like they knew that I wasn't just a guy there to just collect my money and tell my jokes and walk out. they kind of felt like he was here to do the whole thing. Like he wanted to put on a whole show.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think they appreciated it. And so they liked my act even better. I don't know if that makes sense. They liked my act even better because
they
knew
make sense.
Who I was. And
you
I walked around and I talked
to
them.
You had talked to people earlier and said that, you know, and introduced yourself as a human being. And so when, because a lot of times when we take the stage, people don't view us as human beings. They're like,
true.
You're just a joke machine.
So it was just one that I thought of off the, when we were talking about what we were going to talk about,
man,
for the show.
Yeah. So it was, just, it was a good show.
I wish I could remember the company and all that. It was like about 5, 6
look
years
like?
Ago.
She
wasn't, she was attractive. I mean,
okay.
It wasn't like
so what
she
happened?
Was like.
Why didn't you, you know, what? Why didn't well, they, like the end of the night, why didn't that turn into a Hallmark Christmas movie? What happened?
I think what you said was right in the beginning. I think she was a lesbian, to be
honest. Oh, okay. Oh, like, so she needed a beard for the night.
Maybe.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right. Yeah, well,
she
that's happened
interested.
More than once to us, hasn't it,
yeah,
sir?
She wasn't interested. Speaking of that, it's a perfect segue. comedy's all about segue.
We know somebody whose segue is. So anyways... There's an S on anyways, by the way.
What do you think about comedians that we don't know who they are kind of thing? Eddie Izzard. What do you think about Eddie Izzard?
I love Eddie Izzard. One of my favorites, top five.
And we both said that kind of off air. And I just wanted to bring up the fact that he has come out in the news and said that he wants to be referred to as a her or a she now.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's got his pronouns. He's got his pronouns.
And I'm like, I'm not trying to make fun of the guy. I think he's one of the most brilliant comedians
I've ever watched.
And I've been referring to him as a her or a she since he wore 8-inch heels on an HBO special like in 2002.
Yeah.
But
this is
that
not a
special is one of
you.
The funniest goddamn specials I've ever.
Oh, that is so great.
The
8-inch
heels didn't bother me.
Yeah.
If he would have sucked that night, I would have been like, who's this ass? And 8-inch heels,
right?
Jokes.
Right, yeah.
But he was brilliant. Uh-huh. I'm like, okay, the 8-inch heels. All right, he's got something else going on his lifestyle.
Yeah.
I thought he was
trying to figure it out, whatever it was.
Yeah, I never cared about it because he was funny.
No,
I don't know if that makes me a bad person, but I didn't
about it either, and nor should anybody.
And now it just comes out, and I'm like, well, wait a minute, he's now saying this?
Yeah, it's a little weird. It's like we knew this. I don't know what the news is. Maybe because it's because everybody up until this point was referring to Eddie Izzard as him.
Sure.
So now she's saying she wants it to be her.
But you told me that you think he's heterosexual. He's
well,
like
that's
women.
That's what he said. All you know, in all the articles that I had read following his career for the last 15-20 years. And I think even in this one, he said, I prefer to be referred to, what did he say? In his girly, girl?
Yeah.
No.
Girl
mode. He said, but I like women. I'm like, okay, I don't know what that means.
This guy might be the smartest guy in the world, right?
Yeah.
He likes women, but he dresses like women. So... You know, lesbians are going to like them.
They can go shopping together.
Heterosexual women are going to like them.
They can go have sex together.
They might not like him for his lifestyle, but they're going to like him because of the shoes he's wearing. So this guy's
they're
going to
hate him for the shoes he's wearing. We know how women can be sometimes with their shoes.
Now, is he single? I don't know, because if he's on Bumble, what do you swipe? He could be in every category
swipe
on
up,
Bumble.
I think. I don't know.
This guy, he's
got It's, you know, it's whatever. He's found his place in humanity, and good for, no, I hear I'm doing it again, saying he. So give us a beat, people, you know, woke America. You know, people need a beat to figure all this out. So Eddie Izzard likes to be referred to as she and her. That's great.
That's great. And so I'm not making fun of it.
She's one of the funniest comedians I've ever seen.
She is
literally
one of the funniest comedians. There's literally been times where back in the day, like 10 years ago, where you're just scrolling past HBO or something, and his special would be on, her special would be on, and I would watch, and I think he's a brilliant comedian.
One of the...
Whatever you want to call that
guy, greatest,
he is absolutely amazing. He's so funny.
One of the greatest onion peelers of all time. Comes out and goes, it just starts rat-a-tat-tatting, and then he's got all the...
Yeah, you're like, he's going to be done with that subject in a minute. No, he's not done with it.
It comes up 20 minutes later, You think she's fleshed it out? No, it comes up at the end of the act. Everything gets tied up in a bow, and you're just you just marvel at the way, not just the funny, but the way the act is constructed.
I totally agree, man. Yeah. So I'm not making fun of. I just wanted to bring it up because
it's a good story to talk about.
It is just something that kind of like, wow, he's finally coming out with her. I don't know. Anyway. What else is going on in life? Tiger Woods played in a pro-am tournament with his son. So his
that was
son
a pro-am.
Finally,
I didn't know that.
His son finally came out into the world for people to see. He's 12 years old. His name is Charlie.
And could probably beat my ass.
Oh, he had an eagle. He had an eagle in the round.
He's 12 and he had an eagle.
He had 12,
I've never had
12
one in my
years
life.
Old, he had a freaking eagle. And all his mannerisms are like Tiger Woods. And his ex-wife was at the tournament as well. She wanted to be his caddy for the day, but Tiger said, no, I don't like the way you handle my 9-iron.
it didn't work out the last time you had a 9-iron when we were together. Oh, that's a great joke.
I was dying to tell that joke. All right. But have you ever done anything like with your son, I guess, because you got kids. I don't have kids. Have you ever done a father-son, father-daughter thing with one of your kids, like bowling?
Yeah. We've done a lot of that.
Tell me about it.
Well, my daughter, Lauren, she's a great mother, the best mother I know. She's got two of my grandsons.
Great kids.
A-son,
so cute.
Leo. Thank you, Sal. They're the lights of my life. And but when she was a kid, yeah, we would go. This was Lauren. Lauren is a funny, an extraordinarily funny person. Funnier than me, actually. And she took me to show and tell day. Okay, so she's 4 years old. It's preschool.
Okay.
And I said to her, I said, honey, what are we bringing to this? I don't see anything. What are you going to be? I figured it. I said, okay, all right. So we go there. So I'm the only dad. I'm sitting there in a semicircle with probably, 15, 20 moms. Yeah. I'm in my suit and tie. And it comes her turn. All these kids have, they're showing, some craft they made at home or a basketball or, whatever. This is what I'm showing and telling. So the teacher says, what did you bring for show and tell? She says, I brought my daddy. Oh, and I looked at her and I said,
he's going to do 10. Give him a light.
Yeah. He's going to do a tight 10. Somebody opened the refrigerator at 9. And the teacher is looking at me like, okay. And I'm looking at Lauren like, okay, what does this mean? So the teacher says to Lauren, tell us something about, what do you and your daddy do? And Lauren, without missing a beat, as a four-year-old, goes, we wrestle and we fart.
Oh, jeez.
This is my daughter at 4. Yeah. I'm like, what? Wait a minute. What? All the mothers are laughing. They got their hands over their mouths. The teacher, and she's looking at me. She goes, look, I see this all the time. I'm like, oh, my God. I can't believe I said that, and the teacher goes, without it missing a beat, she goes, well, that's great, Lauren. What else do you do with your daddy? We've had those moments. My sons and I, Max and Ben, are both fighters. So we have, and I go to see my oldest son, Ben, fight. I've seen him fight 3 times. He's a hell of a fighter.
He is, man.
Muay Thai. Just a savage, but a wonderful guy at heart. And Max is going to have his first fight in the spring as soon as we get a handle on the COVID. We've done those things together.
All right. Yeah. I thought I'd ask you. I put you on the spot. I didn't. This was not pre-planned.
This is all impromptu, baby.
And you figured it out. So I wanted to bring that up. Tiger Woods playing golf with his son. And great story for you as well with Lauren. We are coming up to the end of the year here. We'd like to thank Perfecta Podcast for hosting our show
for the
whole year.
Look how social we are. Perfecta Podcast, Twitter, SallyDO8.
Your tweets are unbelievable. So funny.
And your great website, saldemilio.com.
Yep.
BobPhillipsComedy.com.
We're both looking forward to 2021 and doing a hell of a lot more shows than we did in 2020. Obviously, we've continued this show throughout the pandemic. We've fought our way through masks and dining bans and everything to continue the Sal and Bob podcast, even though we can't go to a steakhouse and enjoy our food.
No, but we've continued the social distancing. We pour each other wine from 6 feet away. We are 6 feet away as in the studio here. We are.
Yep. Yep, we are. And So we're just we wanted to air an episode this week to thank everybody for listening. We've got Christmas here coming up.
A minor holiday.
I mean, Christmas. It just doesn't feel Christmassy this year. Nah, there's just something missing. Obviously, we know it, but it just sucks that, you know, we only get so many turns around the globe, and one of them's going to be, you know.
Yes, one of them is just tarnished. Totally shit.
It's not fun. And
no.
It's
just, you know what? Can I? This is a good moment to say this. You know, I'm not one of these Pollyanna guys. I'm really not. But this particular Christmas teaches us, or should teach everybody, that the sum total of everything in life, the only thing that matters is each other. Seriously.
That's true, man.
I'm not trying. I hope I don't sound maudlin.
No.
The fact that we can't hang out with all our families the way we want, we can't do all the Christmassy things that we've done, traditions, and all of that is based in just being with the people you love, and we can't do it this year. So everybody feels weird. That should tell everybody that we have a million things more in common than we have differences.
That's exactly right, Bob. I mean, seriously. I mean, I'm telling you, next year, because this year it's like I'm not going to my, like, for instance, like I always go to my godparents and have a cup of coffee or espresso, and I have a shot of Zambuca with my godfather who's 90.
Awesome.
I'm not doing that this year. You know, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to my. And I tell you what, man, you're absolutely right. I'm glad you brought that up, because next year we're all going to hug each other a little bit more.
Yeah.
We're all going to go and visit our relatives at Christmas time and be more appreciative. You know, Italians kiss each other on the cheek like once or twice. Next year, it'll be like 9 times. We'll be going back and forth on cheeks for all.
Yeah, but no tongue.
No
tongue.
But it's that's why I say, when this thing's all over, we're going to be closer as a nation.
Yes.
We're going to be. I know there's a lot of divisiveness over the election, but I think we're going to get past that.
We're
going to be like, humanity is going to be like, hey, man. It's all stupid, like you said. Yeah. It's all about family and friends, and
yeah.
So hopefully that happens, because this holiday season sucks.
It's going to happen. I haven't even
listened to any Christmas music on WNIC.
I'm the same way. I've avoided it.
I haven't heard Feliz Navidad one time, and it's December 21st. Seriously, I haven't.
I know. My favorite Christmas song is "Step Into Christmas" by Elton John, because he's my favorite artist of all time. I don't want to listen to it. I don't care. I just want to get through it.
Yeah, I'm with you. But you know, but we gotta somehow muster up the ability to have a good Christmas.
We will.
You know, we will. The good thing is we're gonna have sports during the Christmas holiday. Thank God.
Yep.
Because we didn't have sports in the middle of summer. So we got all the bowl games are coming up. The football playoffs are about to start. Kansas City Chiefs are going to win it all. That's my prediction right now. Patrick Mahomes is going to hoist
Mahomes
it up again.
He's got a few under his belt.
Yeah, he's the most unbelievable quarterback. I wanted to talk about the Super Bowl, because the 2021 Super Bowl is upon us here very shortly. It'll actually be, this is interesting, the Super Bowl will be about 9 days, is it 9 days after Biden takes oath? Right around there.
So the
20th is Biden's inauguration.
Yeah.
And then the Super Bowl is February 7th down in Miami.
Okay.
So you're talking a week, 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, couple weeks. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think with that happening and then the 2 weeks up to the Super Bowl, I think the Super Bowl is almost like the gateway into post-pandemic.
Let's hope so, man.
Right? And Let's the Super Bowl, so. It's not going to be the Lions, obviously. But it's probably going to be like Kansas City and maybe Green Bay.
Not in this decade.
And I thought for sure the Lions might be in this 2020 Super Bowl, because I thought, man, if there's ever one year you'd want to wear a mask watching football,
it would be.
That would be the year that the Lions are in the Super Bowl. But anyway, I want to talk to you about the Super Bowl ads, because you're a marketing guy. You came from a background of business with your father. Who built a successful business. What do you think about Super Bowl ads? Should they be less costly this year or more costly? I'm going to tell you what the figures
less
are.
Less or more? Those are the choices? I'm going to say...
But what would you think because of the pandemic?
Less costly, because they've got to strike some deals because they don't have any... They're more?
Because of production costs to get things done. It's going to be very costly. So a 30-second ad could cost you up to $7 million.
Wow. Wait, why are the production costs so much more? Because they've got a distance and they've got a...
distance and COVID restrictions and,
okay,
and things of that nature. Some extra costs for advertisers because they're not making as much money. Like, for instance, the big commercial is going to be M&M's. They're going to do a big commercial with the M&M caricatures, you know, the ones that are animated, the actual peanut.
Yeah, yeah, characters. Right. Well, funny commercials.
They're very funny, and they're doing a commercial with them. Mars is getting involved with a commercial. TurboTax is doing a commercial, but these commercials are costing more than when we were at a regular country. So it's amazing how companies are finding the money to advertise for the Super Bowl. Well, I think it's amazing.
What's surprising to me about that is M&M is spending $7 million a minute. Okay. A lot of these M&Ms are being consumed in movie theaters. Okay. Now here in Michigan, Big Gretsch just laid down the law last week. We can go to movie theaters, 25% capacity, but you can't have no concessions.
So you
no
can't
popcorn,
even buy those M&Ms.
Okay, you can't buy them. You just go in with your mask and you sit there in silence and you stare straight ahead and you watch that movie. So
maybe that's why Tom Cruise is screaming at his actors. You can't go to the movie to see Mission Impossible 7.
You're Boy, he lost scream. It, didn't he? A couple times.
I don't know.
Call people mother.
I don't know. Somebody said that was a. I read an article. Leah Remini said that it was a publicity stunt.
Yeah.
Because the Church of Scientology is not about. It's not about wearing masks and stuff.
Right.
I don't know if that's exactly how you put it. But they're not into restrictions like social restrictions.
Okay.
So he did that to tell his followers of Scientology, "Hey, wear a mask." So it wasn't about the movie.
Oh. All right.
Leah Remini thinks it was about the Church of Scientology telling those followers, even though we're against this, you need to do it.
That's
what somebody said. It's very interesting.
All right. Leah Remini, I mean, she's been an ex-Scientologist for many years. She had that documentary.
Personally, I think that's bullshit. I think Tom Cruise has his money backed on Mission Impossible 7. He needs to get this thing done.
He's got to get it done.
That's what I think it was about.
Yeah, and you know, when before...
I don't think it had nothing to do with Church of Scientology.
Before one frame was shot, he had to hammer out his contract, and Cruise is well-known for getting money off the back end. That's where he makes all his dough.
Yeah.
He's like, they pay him $5 million up front. That's nothing. That's
the
catering
bill.
This guy's
made more back-end money than Tony Soprano.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know?
And so, he's set to make $100 million on the back end. So, he creates a story and gets some buzz for it. Whatever.
It's buzz. Because to be honest with you, I wouldn't have... Look, these movies that are coming out, they need to create some buzz for it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really no other way to do that right now. And like you said, you're going to have to go to the movie theater in a mask and not drink or eat anything to watch Mission Impossible 7, you know?
Now, was your mom the kind of mom that took you to the movies and put popcorn and, generic brand candy in your pockets so you didn't have to buy the stuff at the theater?
Well, my mom didn't do that. I did that. I did that because I knew early on that I'm like, wait a minute, I can go to Kresge around Kresge, the corner from the cinema and buy Jujubes for $1 or I can pay $5 when I walk across the thing. I mean, I was actually a smart kid. I was like, I'm going to go to Kresge and put them in my, I'll put them down my pants, whatever. I just go in and
I never picked up on it, Sal. They call me Full Price Bob. Okay, that's my nickname.
I figured it out, man.
Well, it's Christmas. We got to figure a couple of things out. We wanted to talk earlier about upsets.
In professional sports. Yes.
And
yes.
I'm not sure where we go, how we got to this point. We were talking pre-show about it and why we wanted to talk about it. Was it because we were talking about the Jets?
Yeah, that's right. The Jets, I'm glad you brought that up. The Jets, for those of you listening, the Jets won yesterday, 20-17. They were 0-12, 0-13.
Yeah.
They might have tied the Lions for the worst record ever, 0-16. But also, they're trying to get a better draft pick, and if they lose every game, they can get anybody they want.
Right.
But if they win, they might get the second or third pick. And they won yesterday. They beat one of the best teams in the NFC, 20-17.
They didn't even know how to lose right.
So now you're absolutely right. They're not going to get the kid from Clemson, or they might not get the kid from Clemson.
And this was, and I know now I know why we were talking.
But
about
But we
the
talked about underdogs
because that game they were 16-point dogs,
17-point,
17. Okay, that is so rare in the NFL. So rare. Seven, that is two touchdowns and a field. That is three scores. That never happens in the NFL.
It's, you know, I tell you what, I've been gambling on football for a long time. Unfortunately, I hate to say that.
Well, but me too.
Like, it's just tough to bet on the NFL. Very, very tough. It's a tough sport
it
to
is,
gamble on.
Because
it's,
of parity.
It's so parity. It's unbelievable. And the line makes it obviously even. But I remember hearing this one guy on, it was like a sports radio show, and he goes, don't ever even bet on those big spreads, those 16, 17, 18. I'm talking NFL, not college, because college will run it up.
Yeah.
But pro, it's so hard to beat a team by 14 to 17 points.
It's so hard.
I remember the guy saying to me, or saying to the public, 70% of all those big spreads end up, the underdog always covers them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I remember him saying that, and now I don't ever bet a game that's above. In the NFL, I will bet Alabama minus 35 against Eastern Michigan.
They'll cover.
I will bet that.
Saban will figure out a way to score 36. Because
they want to impress the pollsters.
Yeah.
So I will bet that. But in the NFL, that's different. And a 17-point spread 70% of the time. Well, the Jets won the game. So not only did they cover the spread,
their fan base is like, what's the matter with you?
Anyway, I don't ever bet on any game that's that much in the NFL because you just, they're NFL players.
I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
But the reason we brought that up is because that was a big underdog win.
Uh-huh.
And what is the biggest underdog win that you remember personally, you watching or just being a part of or just watching? What's your biggest underdog
Probably
experience in
sports? There's actually two. I don't remember the odds for this was 1978. I don't remember the odds for Muhammad Ali defending his title against Leon Spinks. Now, Leon Spinks was an Olympic gold medal champion.
Yeah.
He had only had 8 professional fights at that point. Okay. I don't remember the odds. But he beat Ali.
That was huge.
He beat him, and he beat him rather handily.
Ali, the greatest fighter of all time.
It was
unknown.
Yeah, I don't remember the odds, but I'm going to say this. They were probably less than the odds for the Tyson-Buster Douglas fight in Japan.
Yeah.
This is 30 years
that
ago.
That one was...
Tyson is undefeated. The guys are...
42-1 odds
before they ring the bell. Yeah, what was I? Was it
42-1?
42-1. Okay,
that's
I've never
insane.
Seen those odds before or since.
42-1.
That means
you put $100 on Buster Douglas that night. You win $4,200.
Insane. Absolutely insane odds. Somebody did it somewhere.
Of all time in fighting history.
And Buster Douglas was known for a guy who didn't have a big punch. He didn't come really motivated, but he was a contender, and this was a mandatory defense that Tyson had, and Tyson went out and laid an absolute egg.
Jeez.
And got knocked out in the 10th round, got rocked in the 9th and knocked out in the 10th. And I later read that, and you look back through Tyson's career, that wasn't the first sign that he was in trouble. That was just the result of the trouble he was already going through. He was already in trouble, even when he was, you know, a year before, 2 years before, he was, you know, snorting cocaine.
Yep.
He was getting high before every fight, and the Buster Douglas camp knew this.
They knew this.
They had people in Tyson's camp that were telling him, "Look, this guy's not ready. He doesn't care. He thinks he's gonna whack you out in 2 rounds." And the word came back to the Douglas camp. Look, just stick the jab in his face to keep jab the hell out of this guy for the first 3-4 rounds.
Yeah.
Do nothing but tire this guy out. Bam, bam, bam. Throw a right hand.
Just
get him
go crazy.
Yeah. And he's going to tire out. He's going to lose it because he hasn't been training like he should have. He's coked out. And they followed that to a T. And lo
they
and
did.
Behold, bam.
That whole scenario you're explaining reminds me of our favorite movie on the Salem Bob Show, Rocky.
Yes.
Where what's his name's trainer is watching Rocky like hit the Apollo meat on the television because he was like a news report.
Yeah.
Duke. And he's watching Rocky hit the meat. And you know, Apollo Creed's at his desk, like talking to People magazine and Time magazine. His wife's handing him a cup of coffee. Yeah. And Duke like is watching this and he goes over to he goes, This guy's like different.
Yeah.
Like you gotta let it go, man. Yeah. He's like, no, I'm gonna take this guy and like that's what it reminds me of.
Yeah, that's exactly you know what I mean? That is exactly Sal, that's exactly what happened. It was presaged 1979. That was well, it was 11 years before. Yeah, the fight. Yeah, I think he said now in the first fight.
Let it go.
He's watching Rocky in Rocky One. He's watching Rocky smash that beef in the in Paulie's slaughterhouse.
Problems, man.
And Duke is just kind of looking over his shoulder, going, I don't know, man. And then in the second Rocky, which was great, one of the greatest lines ever, he goes up and he says, "Champ, I saw you beat that man like I never saw anybody get beaten in their life, and he kept coming after you."
Yeah.
We don't need a man like that in our lives, right?
Yes. I mean, goosebumps, dude. Just
I know. I got the hair on my arm.
You saying that line just gave me goosebumps. Yeah. That's how much I love that movie.
Oh, so great.
Unbelievable.
So that's the biggest upset I've seen. Right, how about you, Sal? Yours.
Mine is, man, the ones that I've lived through is probably, and it's kind of funny because when we wanted to talk about this, I kind of looked up what the events are and I knew them all. It's crazy. Like I've been around that long.
We know them all.
Like I know
we probably
all
bet on them.
I've lived them. And for me personally is the Giants beating the Patriots when they were 15-point underdogs in the Super Bowl. It was just a few years ago. Yeah, the Giants beat
a 15-point underdog.
The catch by, that unbelievable catch on fourth down. He made an unbelievable like one-handed catch. I can't remember. Fourth down and 12 or whatever. But anyway,
that was a huge
upset to me. And probably one of the biggest for me and I was 77. Let's see, I was 16 years old. The 1983 NCAA tournament with Jimmy Valvano. And they have a 30-30 for it. So if anybody is listening to me and they don't know what I'm talking about, watch the 30 for 30.
On ESPN.
The North Carolina State. That was the most unbelievable run. They, for those of you who don't understand, it's like they got a win. They were like 9-15 going into the tournament. So they were 9 wins, 15 losses, right?
How did they even get in the tournament?
So they have
back
no
then?
Chance for the at-large tournament bid. They have to win their tournament, okay?
Yeah.
They got to win their league tournament to get an at-large bid. And in their tournament that year was Virginia and Ralph Sampson. So they win all these games in the tournament, unbelievable. And then they meet Ralph Sampson and Virginia in the ACC title game.
Yeah.
Right. And they got a win to go to the tournament. So they got to beat Ralph Sampson. They beat Ralph Sampson, which was an unbelievable game, just to get an at-large bid.
Yeah.
And then they get an at-large bid, and then they meet Virginia again.
And they win.
And they beat him again.
Crazy.
And Jimmy Valvano, like, he knew his team wasn't good enough. So, like, with 3 minutes left in the game, like, he would foul guys. You got to watch the documentary. It's unbelievable. There was a point in the game where it was at halftime. And I forgot what game it was, but they were, like, down by 20. And he had his team huddled up. And he goes, okay, listen, we're going to come back. We're gonna chip away at this lead.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the game, I'm gonna foul number 13, blah blah blah. His name is blah blah blah. And I saw that guy, he can't hit free throws when the game's on the line. I saw him. I watched the tape of him against, you know, blah blah blah, and he sweated at the line and he doesn't know how to he can't handle it. Dude, I swear to God, a minute to go, they found that guy and they start following that guy and they follow him every time and he cannot make a free throw. God bless that guy's heart. I feel bad for him.
Whoever it was.
But anyway, just an amazing NCAA tournament run. He wins the whole thing.
That they started. How do you even get an invitation at 9-15?
Because they got to win their league tournament. If you win your league tournament,
and they did, and
you so get in as if you're 0-17, you get into the league tournament, and if you win your league tournament, you get the at large bid.
Okay.
So anyway,
well,
that
that's
was,
a, such
that
a testament to Valvano. What a great coach!
Yeah, that was.
I know
was
you really like him.
So that was big for me as far as personally. I think your Buster Douglas story was unbelievable. I saw that. That Giants, maybe the Mets winning the World Series in 1969 was unbelievable.
Miracle Mets, yeah, that was pretty unexpected.
So that's kind of my underdog story, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, that's it. We just wanted to bring that up. I thought it was a good subject for us, and we just want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas, man. It's our last we'll have one more show for the year, and then we will wrap up 2020 here on the Sal and Bob Show.
All right, so yeah, just one last thing I wanted to do here. You know, we love movies. Everybody listens to Sal and Bob knows we love movies. We have our favorite movies, but we've never talked about our favorite Christmas movies.
Okay.
And I thought it'd be good to end the show by talking about which Christmas movie is our favorite and why. Okay. So how about you, buddy? What's your favorite holiday
film? I'm gonna do two movies, if you don't mind. I'm going to say my favorite Christmas movie, and then I want to say my late mother's Christmas movie. Favorite movie. Mine was Christmas Story, or mine is Christmas Story, because I just love it. I think I could watch that movie every year, and I just enjoy it. It doesn't get old for me. My mother's favorite movie is Home Alone, and everybody listening out there, if you knew my mom, she just didn't really understand a lot of English, and I just want to say that that movie resonated with her, even though she probably didn't understand a lot of the jokes and the language and but that was such a good visual movie. Funny,
yeah.
That you didn't need to know the language.
You could just watch the.
So I want to say that kudos to whoever did that movie, because that resonated with somebody that didn't understand the language. And she loved it. My mom loved that movie. She couldn't wait to watch it every year.
Oh, that's great, man.
Home Alone. God
spoke to her heart.
Yeah, Macaulay Culkin, you're a great kid actor, man. So you pleasured my mom in that way in Christmas time. So thank you. And mine is Christmas Story. How about yours, man?
You know what? I have a couple of favorites, but the one, this is new. This is only 2 years old. This is called Green Book.
Yeah.
And you know this. You know this movie. It came out 2018. It is... it's a great, and the funny thing about this movie is it's a drama and a comedy, and to me it's a Christmas movie. Now people argue about this all the time. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? Yeah, that argument's so old. I don't even care.
Yeah,
but this one I'm going to argue is just like I argued that Edward Scissorhands is a Christmas movie.
Yes.
Okay. But it's set in 1962, and it's about two guys. There is a virtuoso pianist. His name is Don Shirley, and he's an African-American played by Mahershala Ali. I think I'm pronouncing that right, Mahershala Ali. Anyway, he's a great actor. He's been in a lot of different movies. And he is taking a tour of the American South in 1962. Now, you can imagine all the problems that might come about, you know, in that era. For a black guy to be doing shows in the South. So he is accompanied by an Italian-American bouncer. His name is Frank Tony the Lip Vallelonga.
Yeah.
I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. It looks like Vallelonga, but two L's in Italian is like a Y. Vallelonga?
Yeah.
Okay. So they go down into the South and are doing these dates together. And, you know, Tony the Lip, He's a mafia guy. He's not the most cultured guy in the world. And these two, they play off each other. And it turns out not only, you know, do they have racial differences, but Don Shirley is also gay. You find that out later, in the heart of the movie. And you also find out that, Frank Vallelonga, doesn't care, and nor should he. But they develop this friendship and this sort of grudging kind of acceptance of each other. Vallelonga, he's your typical crude, you know, enforcer guy. And Don Shirley is a virtuoso pianist and, you know, who lives in this beautiful Manhattan apartment, is used to the best things in life. So they go back and forth. And it's just a wonderful sort of it's a buddy Oscar road
nominated,
flick,
man.
It's a road flick too, and it's a buddy flick. It's got all kinds of things going on. What makes it a Christmas movie is that at the very end, I won't give anything away here, the movie ends on Christmas Eve in Frank's home.
Yep.
And you know they're struggling to get home because there's snow and there's all kinds of problems. But the ending is so sweet and it puts such a bow on it that it's become one of my top five.
Great, great movie. I'll probably watch that over the holidays, seriously, because I saw it when it first came out, and I'll probably watch that again because I've only seen it once. I saw it at the movies, and I've never seen it again. So
yeah, it's worth watching again. Time a lot of subtle stuff going on there.
Well, there you go. You learn everything here on the Sal and Bob Show. You learn some Christmas shows or movies to watch. Definitely check out Green Book, check out Home Alone, or check out Christmas Story on any of your streaming podcasts or streaming services. And speaking of streaming podcasts, watch us every Wednesday night on Crossing the Streams with Jeff Twoskin and his crew. And we're part of that.
And Howard and Ron. Fun.
Yeah.
It's a great time.
It's fun, man. It's all good because, you know, we can't be inside places telling jokes, so we're telling them online right now, and that's what we're doing.
If you like TV, if you like binge-watching TV, Crossing the Streams is the show you want to watch because it's an hour of really light entertainment and jokes, but it also catches you up on all the coolest shows.
Yeah, I mean, we all talk about what we're watching, and it's just really funny, and it's just fun, and you can find out. It's just a fun watch, you know?
Yeah.
And that's visual. You can, you know, watch that. So anyway, that'll wrap up the Christmas show here and the Sal and Bob Show. We're glad you guys listened in.
Yeah.
We want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas.
Absolutely.
We'll see you for before the new year. We'll be on here doing another show. One more show left for 2020, and then we'll move into the 2021 campaign.
Yeah, looking forward to getting rid of this year, and just want to wish everybody, all of our friends, our family, all the listeners, everybody who out there that's people who may be struggling during this difficult time, Merry Christmas to you, and we hope you have good holidays.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Sal and Bob Show. We'll catch you guys later. Bye-bye.
Good night.